Seattle. CBS News. Congressman Wayne Hayes lies unconscious in an Ohio hospital. His doctor is treating the effects of an overdose of sleeping pills. I'm Jerry Landay reporting on the CBS Radio Network. At the hospital in Barnesville, Ohio, Hayes' personal physician, Dr. Richard Phillips, says the congressman seems to be slowly shaking off the coma in which he was found by his wife Thursday morning. Aides say Hayes had apparently taken an excessive dosage of Dalmane, a sleeping pill prescribed to help cope with a recurrence of stomach trouble. Congressional colleagues say Hayes had been deeply depressed by the ravages of the sex scandal, which had undermined his once unchallenged position in the House. But Dr. Phillips and Hayes' spokeswoman, Carol Clausen, have tried to counter any suggestions of a suicide attempt.
If there were a suicide note, then we'd say it was an apparent suicide. There was no suicide note. We don't know. We don't know how many pills he took. It is entirely possible that he took what may have been a normal amount of pills for him under normal circumstances. And by that I mean under, you know, normal, regular physical circumstances. But as I said, I know he has not been eating much. And as I would characterize his general physical condition as somewhat weakened.
The result, says Clausen, of the stress of the past 2 weeks. A former Capitol Hill secretary has told the New York Times that she was paid more than $26,000 a year, well above scale, while submitting to the advances of Congressman John Young of Texas. Mrs. Colleen Gardner told the Times that Young ignored her request for staff duties to match her high salary. Instead, she complained, Young repeatedly called her into his office to talk about sex. Mrs. Gardner quit last March. Another of Young's former secretaries, Melanie Hall, says he made sexual advances to her. She turned down the offer of a substantial raise and also resigned. Young is in line to become chairman of the Joint Congressional Atomic Energy Committee. He denies the charges. More news after this.
Well, I've finally done it.
Done what?
Given up gambling.
No more gin rummy, poker, the races.
Nope. From now on, when I have a package to mail, I'm going to put it on a sure thing.
What sure thing?
Greyhound's Next Bus Out Package Express Service.
Are you sure?
Sure, I'm sure. It's guaranteed. All I have to do is call to find out when buses are leaving and take my package to the Greyhound station at least a half hour early. Greyhound guarantees my package will go on the bus I choose, with special handling all the way. Almost any delay, and they automatically refund the special handling charge. For most packages going less than 500 miles, Greyhound schedules next day service. Many packages get there in hours. Whether I ask for Next Bus Out service or use their regular economy service, they notify the person on the other end when the package arrives.
It sounds like Greyhound's Next Bus Out service would be handy for business shipments, too.
For sure. Greyhound's Next Bus Out Package Express service. It takes the gamble out of mailing a package.
Now that's a good bet.
The first symbolic units of the all-Arab peace force being assembled by the Arab League have begun to arrive in Lebanon. Troops from Libya, the Sudan, and Algeria were reportedly being shuttled to Damascus, Syria, for transfer to Lebanon. The peace force, aimed in part at easing the military burdens of Syrian President Assad, whose troops are occupied opposite Israeli forces in the Golan Heights, as well as in Lebanon. The Syrian government also announced it is taking urgent and appropriate measures to deal with the concentration of Iraqi troops near the Syrian border. Relations between the two nations have been strained for some time. The House has overwhelmingly passed a bill that would assure states and localities of another 4 years of federal revenue sharing. The bill keeps to a minimum the number of federal restrictions on how the money can be used. The bill calls for the distribution of more than $6.5 billion a year to state and local governments. The measure goes to the Senate. Adolf Zukor, the last of the pioneer founders of the American film industry, has died in Hollywood. Zukor discovered Mary Pickford, established Paramount Pictures. He was 103 years old. Now this.
I'm Barbara Hale from Anna, and I'd like to introduce some friends of mine, Danny Davis and the Nashville Brass. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Barbara. Am I excited? Boy, we've just finished a fabulous record for all America. A special bicentennial stereo album recorded exclusively for Amana. called America, 200 Years Young.
A $6.95 value for only a dollar, just for watching a demonstration of Amana's revolutionary Touchmatic radar range. The first microwave oven with a memory. Fantastic. You get food from the freezer to the table piping hot just by touching a few numbers. Simple as 1, 2, 3. See the Amana Touchmatic radar range demonstrated at participating Amana retailers and get your Amana Bicentennial album for a dollar.
With Danny Davis and the Nashville Bass. Get it.
They'll no longer be shuffling in Buffalo, but riding the new trolley. The Federal Department of Transportation has approved a federal grant of $269 million to help Buffalo, New York build the first new trolley car system in several decades. The system will be a far cry from the clanger of Toonerville fame, the new Buffalo trolley to be of advanced design, suitable for operating both above and below ground. I'm Jerry Landay, CBS News.
CBS for Seattle, this is KIXI, and the time is 10:06.
CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Psychiatrists have sought the answers to puzzling facets of human behavior for years. Today, we speak freely of phobias, unexplained psychotic experiences. But in the year 1793, a humane, enlightened physician of the infamous mental institution at La Bicetre, a hellhole by any description, was brought to trial for daring to treat mental patients like human beings. He himself was called mad for, as the court put it, freeing the beasts from their chains. But as I said, times have changed. The story we're about to tell you about the horrors that took place in a similar institution is true. But it never really could have happened. Not here. Not yet. Not now.
Stop it! Make them stop it, Doctor. That noise,
oh,
please.
Oh, it's just a summer night storm, Miss Agatha. You are safe here in the sanatorium.
Oh, yes. Nothing here can harm me.
That's right. Now, go to sleep. I have to check on the other patients.
Yes, Doctor. There are others here who need watching. The dangerous ones. They hate me. They all hate me.
You must get some sleep. It's getting late.
Yes, you're right, Doctor. For the dangerous ones, it's getting later than you think.
Our mystery drama, Free the Beast, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Ralph Goodman and stars Paul Hecht. It is sponsored in part by True Value Hardware Stores and Buick Motor Division. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
When you say but, you've said a lot. want to only want the king of beers. When you say Budweiser,
you've said it all.
Anheuser-Busch, headquarters, St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay, kids, here you are.
Thank goodness.
Oh, Harry, chocolate cone?
Hey, who said you can't eat ice cream in a car? We got wet ones, moist towelettes, the pop-up cleanup. Here, pass them around. They're ready when you need them. Nothing to unfold or unwrap. They're soft, they're strong, and disposable.
Hey, Dad, I could use another wet one.
When you want to wash up, but there's no place to wash. Up, a wet ones.
Wet ones is also available in a new smaller size port-a-pack for purse or pocket.
Here's Mother Teresa of Calcutta, whose sisters work with the sick, the dying, and the destitute of the world.
In India, we are taking care of nearly 46,000 lepers. We are now in 54 cities in India. We go to the people. All our work is going to the people.
Mother Teresa's sisters take care of the crippled and the unwanted. They have feeding centers and more, much of it due to the generosity of the American people.
I'm happy to have this opportunity to personally thank the people of the United States because we have been able to feed so many, to take care of so many. For us, Catholic Relief Service, the people of United States have been the divine providence.
Catholic Relief Services continues to assist Mother Teresa and her workers. Support CRS along with the U.S. Catholic Conference Office of Migration and Refugees, as well as other distinguished works of the American bishops through the American Catholic Overseas Aid Appeal.
The elderly patients at the formidable isolated Greenbrier Sanitarium have been restless all day. And now that night is closing in and the intensity of the darkening clouds increase, the doctors and nurses double their rounds. The resident psychiatrist, Dr. Paul Thurman, has begun his nightly round of the third floor. Patients on this floor, although completely harmless, do need his personal attention. Most are alone in the world, deserted by friends and family. He pauses a moment outside one of the doors because he hears an unfamiliar voice.
Yes, I have watched them. Each night I have watched. Listened.
A strange voice. One he cannot identify seems to be coming from Miss Agatha's room. But that is not possible. Miss Agatha has been at Briarwood for almost a year and has spoken to no one.
Nothing will harm you. I've always looked after you, and I shall continue to look after you. As long as we both shall live.
Miss Agatha.
Yes, Doctor?
Oh, you're alone. I thought...
Yes, Doctor?
I could have sworn I heard...
Heard what?
Well, I thought... strange, there's no one here in the room with you, and yet...
Yet what, Doctor?
I distinctly heard a voice. Oh, not your voice, Miss Agatha, but an older voice, a woman 70 or 80.
You must be mistaken, Doctor.
She called you little sister.
I have no sister.
Yes, I know that.
But I do have a puzzle for you.
A puzzle?
Brothers and sisters, I have none. But that woman's mother is my mother's daughter. Who am I?
Miss Agatha...
No, no, stop. Make them stop, Doctor, that noise.
Just a summer night storm, Miss Agatha. You're safe here.
Yes. Nothing here can harm me.
That's right. Now, lie back. Close your eyes and go to sleep. I must check on the other patients.
Yes, Doctor. They need watching. The dangerous ones. They hate me. They all hate me.
You must get some sleep. It's very late.
Yes. You're right, Doctor. It is very late for the dangerous ones. It's later than you think.
But I tell you, I heard it, Margaret.
But it's hard to believe, Paul. A strange, disembodied voice coming from Miss Agatha's room? And you went into the room and saw nothing?
Nothing but Miss Agatha sitting up in bed. She was terrified of the storm, and the voice was calming her.
It's strange.
I know there was someone or something in there talking to her.
But it sounds so illogical. There's only one door leading to each of those upstairs rooms. The windows are barred, and... Darling, are you sure?
Of the voice, yes. But where it vanished to, no.
Could she have been talking to herself?
No, she never has. Besides, the voice was so different. The entire quality of that voice, it was so much older, raspier. I tell you, Margaret, something strange, something unexplainable took place on that third floor last night.
If I may say so, Doctor, considering you are an accredited psychiatrist... You're acting weird.
The word, darling, is weirdly. I'm not acting weirdly, just cautiously. There is one thing you can do, sweetheart.
What's that?
Let's start by pulling the file on Miss Agatha. See if she has any relatives she hasn't told us about.
Relatives? Miss Agatha? Oh, she doesn't have. I mean, I've gone over her file a number of times since she was admitted. She's an only child.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
That voice, the voice I heard in her room, it called her little sister.
Look, Paul... I know I shouldn't attempt any psychiatric explanations, but you know how lonesome Miss Agatha is, never making friends with the other patients here.
What are you getting at?
Well, it's a theory that's usually applied to children, but considering how far Miss Agatha has regressed, isn't it possible that she's invented a playmate, a protective playmate, an older sister?
That's a good try, but just you concentrate on being beautiful, huh? Let me concentrate on what I heard in that empty room last night.
You still insist there was someone in there?
Someone or something. I know that's, as you say, weird for an accredited psychiatrist to suggest. But go through Miss Agatha's file once more. And if she hasn't got an older sister, well, we'd better start looking for an 80-year-old patient in this institution who can walk through walls. This is a progress report dated the 28th. Patient Miss Agatha Milford, age 37. Patient not adjusting to confinement. Resistance to group therapy aggravated by persecution complex. Oh, yeah, come in. Patient is convinced that members of group are hostile to her.
Sounds like you're reporting on Miss Agatha, right?
Right. I'll be with you in a minute, Margaret. Just let me complete this tape.
I brought her file. Everything I could find on her.
Oh, well, in that case, I'm with you right now.
I dug up everything I could find on her.
Good. I'll do my report again later after we check what you have.
But it's a waste of time, really.
What?
I don't have a thing. No brothers, no sisters. She has none.
Brothers and sisters, I have none. But that woman's mother is my mother's daughter.
What?
That's what Miss Agatha said last night. When I heard that strange voice in her room, I asked if she had a sister. She said no. And then she added, brothers and sisters, I have none, but that woman's mother is my mother's daughter.
Oh, I've heard that riddle before. But isn't it son? I mean, that man's father is my father's son?
Yeah, but not the way she says it.
What does it mean?
I don't know. Right now, I don't know anything for sure. I don't even know if I actually heard that voice coming from Miss Agatha's room.
But you said that...
Oh, I heard a voice, all right. It wasn't Miss Agatha. It sounded like it came from her room, but... Could it have come from somewhere else?
Where? The rooms are 30 feet apart. If it came from the next room, Mrs. Haverstrom's room...
No. It couldn't have come from Haverstrom's room. I passed there. All was quiet. It came from the far end of the hall... I wonder...
What?
Oh, no. Never mind. Let's see that file.
Here you are.
Mm.
Oh, and talking about Mrs. Haverstrom.
Yeah?
Well, she and Miss Agatha got into another one of their brawls this morning.
Oh, no. What about...
Same thing. Miss Agatha still insists that the gold locket Haverstrom wears around her neck is hers. You know, the one with the picture of Haverstrom's father in it.
Yeah, what's this? What's this entry here? It's hardly legible. It's a, look, it's some sort of legal document. It seems to be rain damaged. Well, what is it?
Adoption papers.
Adoption papers?
Yeah. 1936 or 39. I can't quite make it out. Mm. An adoption agency in Greenville Township. That's just across the county line.
The name on the document is Milford.
Yeah.
That first name looks like it could be Agatha.
Yeah?
You know, I bet if we checked this out, we'd find it's Miss Agatha who was adopted.
But it's funny she never mentioned
it. Well, she may not know. Mm-hmm. Most adopted children are never told. Agency records are confidential. But I think we've come up with a lead.
A lead? When she doesn't know she's adopted and agency records are top secret, what kind of a lead is that?
That's a tough one, I'll admit. But with a little digging, we may find out more about our strange Miss Agatha. Now, what was that about the locket?
The usual. Miss Agatha insists that the locket is hers. And this time she tried to tear it off Mrs. Haverstrom's neck. And, well, Haverstrom swung her cane at her. But fortunately, she missed.
That Haverstrom locket?
It could be Agatha's, you know.
Well, I don't see how. Agatha Milford came here less than a year ago. I mean, look at her record. Here's what she brought with her. Just a few personal belongings. Items supplied by County Hospital. Oh, no jewelry.
I see.
Well, just keep Haverstrom and Miss Agatha separated, will you?
Yes, Doctor. And the voice in the night?
That I intend to check out further.
How?
From now on, I'm not making those spooky nightly rounds alone.
I don't blame you.
Starting tonight, you're going with me. Time to make the rounds. Someone covering for you down here?
Yes, one of the matrons.
All right, let's be off, shall we? Just a few more steps to the top. Oh, careful, careful. The railing here is not too secure.
Railing? This entire third floor is ancient. If you ask me, we ought to close down the whole building. At least this crumbling railing should be replaced. Paul, if you'd only talk to the correction board, they might be... What's that?
I don't know. It's coming from the far end of the hall.
Miss Agatha's room?
Let's see, shall we? Yeah, those are the same sounds I heard last night.
Don't cry, little one. There's no need to cry. I'm here with you always.
That. The other voice. Did you hear it?
I don't know. I heard the wind.
You are not alone, little sister. You need fear nothing or no one. Do not cry. I will never leave you.
Is it a voice or is it the wind? I can't quite understand the words.
Shh,
and yet...
shh. Listen. Listen.
There's nothing to fear, my little sister. No one will harm you. I've always looked after you. I will continue to look after you. Until death do us part.
It's a weird voice. It's certainly not Miss Agatha's.
Please, shh.
Tell me, little sister, why do you weep? Is it about... the locket. Your locket. The one that's been taken from you.
Yes. Yes, the locket. That Haverstrom woman still has it. She tried to kill me. I wish she were dead.
She's talking to herself about that fight she had with Mrs. Haverstrom this morning.
Yeah.
Or is she talking to herself?
I want it, sister. I want it. That locket is mine. Mother gave it to me. You were there. You remember?
Yes, I remember, little sister. The locket is yours. And you shall have it. I promise. I promise.
Wait. Don't go.
I must, little sister. I must.
The voice. Listen, it's fading.
Quick, open the door.
I can't. It's locked.
The keys. Use the keys.
Sister, please. Come back.
Damn it, the keys. I don't have them. Miss Agatha.
Miss Agatha, it's Dr. Thurman. Let me in.
No, no, doctor, go away. I'm asleep. I must rest.
Please, Miss Agatha, Nurse Palmer is with me. I must talk to you. Please, please let us in.
Well, what have we here? A ghostly disembodied voice that makes nightly visits to one of the lonely inmates of Greenbrier Sanatorium? Has Miss Agatha invented an older sister to console her in her loneliness? Dr. Thurman seems convinced that the voice he hears is not that of Miss Agatha. But for the moment, he has chosen not to make a hasty decision, convinced that there is more to what is going on than meets the ears. We'll learn more when I return shortly with Act Two.
And now Coffee Rich, the frozen non-dairy creamer, presents Coffee Clocks.
Tonight we hear Harry and Edith, Richfield City's controversial couple, in deep conversation.
Harry?
Huh?
Harry?
What do you want, Edith?
Harry, your mother's coming.
Right, right.
Well, what color pitcher do you want me to serve the coffee, Richie?
I don't know anything about pitchers. I mean, just pour it from the carton. It'll be fine.
Mommy!
Harry, my baby!
Mommy, my mommy!
Take my coat and get me a cup of coffee.
Oh, sure. Here, Mom.
I see you've taught the little lady a little something about good taste.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This coffee's creamy and delicious. Edith must be trying to impress me by using Coffee Rich.
Hi, Mother. You noticed the coffee, Rich. It's really convenient. You just keep it in the refrigerator. When I heard
it,
you...
Edith. You made two good choices in your life. You married my Harry, and now you're serving Coffee Rich. Why don't you quit while you're ahead?
And so we shall. Take it from Harry's mommy and try delicious Coffee Rich yourself. Coffee Rich, in your grocer's frozen food case.
You know that feeling when you have a job and you give it everything that you can. It's a good feeling, a real good feeling, getting back what you've been putting in. Yes, it's a good feeling. What's a good feeling when you're doing what you like to do? And it's a good feeling. What's a good feeling when you're working just because you're you?
If you get the feeling that you've been discriminated against on the job because you're between age 40 and 65, call the folks at the nearest federal wage and hour office today. They're listed under U.S. Government, Department of Labor. This is Diana Trask, and this message has been brought to you as a public service by the U.S. Department of Labor and this station.
Over 600 years ago, back in the 15th century, two scholarly monks compiled a book of horrors called Malleus Maleficarum, a definitive study of mental illness that proved conclusively that the poor tortured souls chained in the snake pits were not ill, but unwillingly possessed by demons and witches. Two cures were suggested by these enlightened scholars: cleansing fire to be used against witches, and torture on the rack to discourage invading demons. It is recorded that both of these cures worked permanently, but that was yesterday. Morning has come to Briarwood. The strange voice that haunts the third floor still remains a mystery. Dr. Thurman is seated in his office, recording the case history of the frightened, uncommunicative Miss Agatha Milford.
The possibility of schizophrenia exists. Further testing is called for. Oh, yes, come in.
Hey, good morning, Doc. How's it going?
Oh, Connolly, I'm just taping more about that strange experience I've been telling you about. Hang on a minute, I'll shut off this tape recorder.
You know, that's a great way to keep records.
Yeah.
I've been meaning to buy one of those gadgets for the agency. How's our suspect, Miss Agatha, doing?
Oh, please, let's not refer to her as a suspect. She's a patient, one we know very little about.
That's why I called you in. Did you have any luck tracing those adoption papers? Or is the agency still in existence?
You know, you're lucky, Doc. That adoption agency is still in existence. And I was able to get a look at their files. I got it all right here.
I appreciate the effort you're putting into this.
Well, you're an old friend, Doc. For clients, we do the possible. For friends, the impossible.
Thanks, Connolly. Would you let me see the file?
Now, hold it. This is a favor, right, Doc? So why don't you let me read it to you? Feed you a clue at a time so as I can get more than just one pat on the back for being so clever.
Yeah, sounds like you hit the jackpot.
Yeah, I kind of. Now, to understand this complicated dossier, we'll have to start here on page 7 and work our way backwards.
Funnily.
Relax, will you, please? Let's see. First, we have the patient transfer from Greenville to Briarwood, the newspaper clippings, then the murders.
Murders?
I'm coming to them. Here we are. Milford, Agatha, natural parents.
Natural?
Your hunch was right, Doc. She was adopted.
Then the name of the child on the adoption papers, the name we couldn't read?
Agatha Ann Milford. Adopted daughter of Charles and Henrietta Milford. Her real mother was named Mason. Carrie Lee Mason. She worked as a lab technician at Mercy Hospital. That's where the child was born. A few months before the trial took place.
Trial?
Yeah. It seems Miss Agatha's mother was some sort of nurse's aide at the hospital, took care of terminally ill patients. And she was a very sympathetic woman. Unfortunately, too sympathetic.
What does that mean?
Well, according to these newspaper clippings I dug up at the library, dated September 1939, the supposedly kindly Mrs. Mason was accused, and later convicted, of the murder of 6 of her patients. She simply turned off the oxygen supply and let nature take its course, which, of course, was inevitable. Only the jury judged it to be murder in the first degree.
Oh, poor woman. Watching those patients suffer day after day. Wasn't the pressure that she was under taken into consideration by the court?
Ah, but that's just the point. Evidence in the trial showed that she was under no pressure at all before, during, or after the murders. According to her testimony, she just followed orders.
Orders?
She said a voice told her to do it. It's all here in this newspaper account. It seems our Mrs. Mason heard voices in the night. Voices that calmed her and comforted her in times of trouble. And voices that told her how to comfort others.
Good Lord. Like mother, like daughter.
What?
No, nothing. Go on. What else do you have there? This woman, Mrs. Mason, Miss Agatha's mother, did she have any other children?
Other children?
Yeah, sons, daughters. Particularly daughters. A girl, perhaps, older than Miss Agatha.
Oh, at least not according to the records I've dug up. Mrs. Mason had no other children. Miss Agatha was an only child.
Are you sure? It's important. Could there possibly be a sister, an older sister?
Oh, you mean that voice you've been hearing, huh? I'm sorry, Doc. There's no answer in that. When the Mason woman was sent up for the murders, her child was put up for adoption. Miss Agatha, that is. Her only child. Now, of course, there are skeletons at every closet if you want me to dig deeper.
Yeah, I wish you would.
Well, sure, old buddy, I will.
The easy way out is to classify Miss Agatha as a schizophrenic.
You mean that Miss Agatha and her sister may be the same person?
Yeah.
Only you don't really believe that.
No, not after the studies I've made so far. There are reasons too complicated to go into.
Yeah. Well, if I can be of any help...
Thanks, you have been. Oh, by the way, is there a picture of Miss Agatha's father in those clippings?
Yeah, I believe there is. Wait a minute. Yeah, here we are. Hi. Nice-looking guy.
Yeah.
Mustache, long sideburns, looks like Valentino, huh? Why?
Oh, we've had a little dispute over a gold locket. It belongs to Mrs. Haverstrom. Inside the locket is a picture of her father. Miss Agatha claims the locket is hers.
Well, here, take a picture. Oh, compare it. That'll take care of one problem.
I hope so. I've had to lock Miss Agatha in her room. I had a padlock installed last night. At least I know she'll be safe until this petty bickering is over with. And we can try to trace that strange voice we've been hearing.
Well, if you hear two voices coming out of there now, you'll know it's just another case of schizophrenia.
Yeah, I hated to have to do it. Miss Agatha is not a violent person. She must have been terrified when Mrs. Haverstrom swung that cane at her.
Oh? Sounds to me like you locked up the wrong patient.
Mrs. Haverstrom is not violent by nature.
Look, there's too much to explain. If you'll let me have that photo, she'll prove once and for all who the owner of that locket is. Oh, excuse me.
Sure.
Dr. Thurman speaking.
What?
When did it happen? Miss Agatha, where is she? I see. Yeah. I'll be right there. Well, we won't need that photo after all, Connolly. Mrs. Haverstrom is dead.
What? Dead?
The third floor railing. It's needed repairs for months. The poor crippled old woman must have leaned against it. She just fell to her death down three flights of stairs.
Well, look, could she have been pushed?
Look, I'm sorry. I can't discuss this any further. I gotta get to the infirmary.
Down, Paul. I can't keep up with you.
I'm sorry, Margaret. I'm anxious to check out Miss Agatha's room. I just don't understand how Mrs. Haverstrom got out of her room and over to that shaky railing alone. Where was the third floor matron, huh?
She was called away for a few moments.
I've told you never to leave the third floor unattended.
She was only gone for a short while. You heard me tell that to the police.
Yeah, they're taking the body away. When this gets out, Margaret, I just can't understand what happened. Come on, let's get to Miss Agatha's room.
All right, Doctor. I'm sure you'll find everything in order. Door locked since last night, as per your instructions. Padlock on, also locked.
I don't think so, Miss...
Connolly, what are you doing up here?
Just a little checking, Doc. What I found isn't too pleasant.
Who is this man?
I'm sorry. Margaret, this is Charles Connolly, detective.
Detective?
Private detective, a friend of mine. He's been checking into Miss Agatha's background for me.
Whatever for?
I wanted to find out more about her. I told him about the argument she had with Mrs. Haverstrom over that locket.
That Haverstrom woman didn't fall down that flight of stairs by accident.
What are you trying to say, Connolly?
The woman was dragged from her room and tossed through that rotted railing. She was murdered.
What?
Well, I didn't say anything in front of the police. I mean, they accepted it as an accident, but someone carried her to that railing and pushed her over. My guess would be Miss Agatha.
But that's impossible. She's been locked in her room since midnight.
Well, that remains to be seen. Where's her room?
At the end of the corridor. But even if she did get out, she couldn't lift a 200-pound arthritic patient like Mrs. Haverstrom.
The woman wasn't lifted. She was dragged along the floor. I found black heel marks leading to the edge of the stairs and the end of the broken railing.
Let's get to her room.
Okay, right with you, Doc.
How could Miss Agatha get out of her room? It was bolted from the outside, reinforced by a security lock. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, I'm afraid there's just no other answer.
There's got to be another answer.
Huh?
Up ahead. Now, you see that room at the far end of the hall?
Huh?
Well, that's Miss Agatha's room. And even from here, you can see that the padlock is still on and it's still intact.
Well, I'll be... Yeah, not a mark on it. It sure looks okay. It's solid, sturdy. Who has the key?
I do. If you gentlemen will step aside,
Well, good morning, Doctor. It's such a beautiful morning, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is, Miss Agatha. You slept well, I trust?
Oh, very well, Doctor. I see you've brought some visitors. Nurse Palmer.
Good morning, Miss Agatha.
And a gentleman I don't believe I've met before.
This is Mr. Connolly, Charles Connolly, an old friend. He just stopped by to say hello, meet some of our new patients.
How nice. A pleasure to meet you, Mr. Connolly.
Well, thank you, Miss Agatha.
And may I say you've come to the right place.
I beg your pardon?
Well, I mean, it doesn't look like much from the outside, but it's so pleasant here. Everyone is so nice.
Oh, yes. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Even Mrs. Haverstrom. She was trouble for a while, but everything is fine now. It's all been taken care of.
It has?
Yes. Doctor, I have a confession to make. That was my sister you heard me talking to in my room. I didn't want to admit it because of sanitarium rules. No visitors after 8 o'clock. But since she won't be coming back anymore, I can confess, admit, that she's been here. Because everything is all right again.
What do you mean, everything is all right again?
Well, look, Doctor. Look what I have around my neck.
Good Lord. Mrs. Haverstrom's locket.
D.
Despite evidence to the contrary, Dr. Thurman still insists that his initial psychological diagnosis of Miss Agatha was correct. Convinced that this frail, frightened woman could not possibly be involved in anything as horrible as murder, let's hope Paul Thurman is right. Because if he is not, he could be dead wrong. We'll learn more when I return shortly with Act 3.
If you want the Father's Day gift you give to be used, give something useful. Hi, Pat Summerall here with just one of the many useful Father's Day gifts you'll find at your True Value Hardware Store, Black & Decker Mod 4 Tools. Right now, True Value Hardware Stores offer the Black & Decker Mod 4 Trim and Shear Kit, two cordless electric garden tools for less than you'd pay for a comparable tool separately. You get a shear head, a shrub trimmer head, and the interchangeable energy pack and recharger to fit both. The Mod 4 grass shear cuts where the mower can't reach, around the perimeter of an acre, on an overnight charge. The shrub trimmer cuts 30 minutes or more on an overnight charge, and the energy pack and recharger fit several other Black & Decker Mod 4 tools as well. The Black & Decker Mod 4 Trim and Shear Kit is just one of the many useful Father's Day gifts you'll find at participating True Value Hardware stores. And you can charge it on Master Charge at many stores. Just tell them Pat Summerall sent you.
I live on the street with my mommy and daddy. I have a little sister, too. It's a lot of fun, most of the time. Except when my little sister takes my toys. She's yucky. Our family had a problem once, and Mommy and Daddy were upset with each other a lot. My mommy called the people at the Mental Health Association, and they helped us. I guess Mommy didn't know what to do, and the Mental Health Association gave us information and several places where we could go. I bet they could help anybody. Mommy said she found them in the telephone book. They were so nice. Daddy said they help people with all kinds of problems. I bet they could help you if you needed it. I wonder if they could talk to my little sister about playing with my toys.
Your Mental Health Association. People who care. People who can make a difference.
The strange death of Mrs. Haverstrom at the Briarwood Mental Institution could, by those untrained in psychiatric research, be simply diagnosed as madness. Wasn't it Lewis Carroll's observation in Alice in Wonderland that went something like this? "How do you know I'm mad?" Alice remarked. "You must be," said the cat, "or you would not be here." A simple solution to our mystery, I must admit. But not for those of us who have been expertly trained in madness and murder. We need more time to contemplate, consider, to separate the half-lies from the truths. Listen.
And since the death of Mrs. Haverstrom, continued attempts made by staff members to remove the golden locket from Miss Agatha's throat have made the patient exceedingly hostile. She has become suspicious of all who enter her room and is now refusing food unless served by the one staff member she trusts, Nurse Palmer. Oh, yes, come in. All attempts to gain access to Gold Locket have failed.
Until this morning, Paul. Look, the locket.
Yes. How did you get it?
She held it a little too tightly this morning. The clasp broke, and I told her I'd have it repaired and bring it right back.
Huh. As simple as that?
Where is the picture of the father that Mr. Conley gave you? I want to compare it with the one Mrs. Haverstrom showed me. I've been trying to open that clasp, but it seems to be jammed.
Oh, here, give it to me. Let me do that. You'll find the newspaper clipping in that desk drawer, the one on the left.
I'll get the picture.
Okay.
You work on that clasp. Were these the clippings?
Yeah. This clasp seems to be bent. I'll get it in a minute. Do you remember what the man in the locket looked like? Was he young, old?
Young man, about 30.
Well, that sounds about right. Man in the newspaper clipping was about 30.
Sort of plain looking, slightly balding.
Plain looking? Balding?
What's wrong?
A mustache or long sideburns?
No. Mrs. Haverstrom's father was clean-shaven, heavy features. It was a tintype. I guess it must have been taken in the early 20s.
Well, It's not the same man.
It's not?
Nope. Here, give me the clippings. I'll show you. See, there. There. That's Miss Agatha's father. There, young, dashing, handsome. Looks a lot like Valentino, huh?
Oh, I'll be darned. All this trouble for nothing.
Yeah. I finally got this locket open. There, you see... Oh, no.
What's the matter? Paul, what is it?
The photo in the locket. It's neither the man you described nor the man in the clipping. It's a photo of a woman. An old woman in her 80s who looks exactly like Miss Agatha.
And so I rushed right over to your office, Mr. Conley. I brought the locket with me. And inside, you'll find the picture of that strange woman that we found when we opened it.
Could I see that locket, Miss Palmer?
All right, but I have to bring it right back. Miss Agatha found out I showed it to Dr. Thurman. She's very upset. She says she told her night visitor, you know, the avenging sister, about Dr. Thurman refusing to return her locket.
Which means he's next on her list. Or somebody's list. Can I look at that locket, please?
Oh, yes, of course. Here.
Thank you.
The clasp is still jammed, so I left it open, you see. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the photo that we found inside the locket. It looks exactly like Miss Agatha, only 30 years older.
Yeah. Yeah, it does, doesn't it? And you have no idea how this photo got in here, hmm?
No. I mean, we still have no idea how Miss Agatha got the locket in the first place. The last time I saw it, Mrs. Haverstrom was wearing it.
Yeah, I know.
And when Mrs. Haverstrom fell through the railing to her death down that flight of stairs, Miss Agatha was locked in her room.
How many keys are there to that padlock?
You still insist Miss Agatha had something to do with Mrs. Haverstrom's death. But in order to do that, she'd have had to have help from the outside. An accomplice at the sanitarium.
How many keys, Miss Palmer?
Two. Mine and Dr. Thurman's. Oh. Since Dr. Thurman is an old friend of yours, I suppose that puts me in the category of being a prime suspect.
No, I didn't say that. You did.
But you didn't say I'm not. If anyone had the opportunity to assist Miss Agatha in this, what you call, madness, I did.
Yeah, Miss Palmer, I've thought of that. I mean, you turned the third floor over to a matron that night, right? Then sent her on some sort of errand.
What do you mean, some sort of errand? We have a diabetic patient under our care, Mr. Conley. I sent the matron to give that patient an insulin shot.
Was the patient on the third floor?
No. No, she's in Ward 1 on the main floor.
Then that would leave the third floor unsupervised, huh? And it would give you time enough to accomplish whatever you wished, unobserved.
I resent this.
Time enough maybe to smother Mrs. Haverstrom with a pillow, drag her to the top of the stairs and toss her to her death through the rotted railing?
Is that an accusation?
No, Miss Palmer, it's just a theory.
All right. And how do you explain the locket that we found around Miss Agatha's neck?
Well, you have a key to her room. You could have slipped in, placed the locket around her neck while she slept.
And the photo, Mr. Conley? I assume you have an answer on that, too. Where would I have gotten a photo of an old woman who looks exactly like Miss Agatha?
From one of the newspaper clippings I left with Dr. Thurman. The Carrie Lee Mason file. A duplicate of the one I keep here in my desk drawer. Would you like to see the clipping, Miss Palmer? A recent clipping?
Mr. Conley, I've been patient until
here
now.
Here is what Carrie Lee Mason looks like today.
The same. The same photo. It's exactly the same as the one in the locket.
Oh, not quite, Miss Palmer. You see, the prison guards have been cut away to make the photo fit in the locket frame. Easily enough done with, a pair of surgical scissors.
I've heard enough.
I haven't. Now, I've checked out this sister theory Paul Thurman keeps insisting on, and so far I've come up with nothing.
My partner Ross is out on it right now.
You've had less than 48 hours.
He's going to come up with nothing, Miss Palmer. The prisoner's in Greenville. He's there now checking their records, and it's a waste of time.
If you don't find any record of an older sister, then there has to be some other answer. Because I'm not it.
Oh?
You forget. The night Dr. Thurman heard that strange voice coming from Miss Agatha's room, that second night, when I went with him to check it out, I was standing right alongside of him, outside the room.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, if you can explain how it's possible for a person to be in two places at the same time.
Oh, that's very simple, Miss Palmer. The voice Dr. Thurman heard could have been on tape.
Tape?
Yeah. You do make it a practice to record patient histories on tape, do you not, Miss Palmer? I heard Dr. Thurman making such a recording when I stopped by his office. Who transcribes those recordings, Miss Palmer?
I do.
Excuse me. I won't be a minute. Hello? Connolly? Oh, it's you, Ross. What? What new development on the Mason file? You just found out what? Yeah, I'll meet you at the sanitarium. And then notify the police. Nurse Palmer will be with me. We're leaving right now. Bye.
What was all that about?
There's no time to explain now. How fast is that car of yours?
It's not mine. It's Dr. Thurman's. It's a sports car. It can do 100 if you open it up.
Well, baby, we're going to open it up. We got to get back to that sanitarium, and let's hope we make it in time.
Mr. Conley, please. Please slow down.
Just hang on, baby.
Hang on. I've been hanging on for dear life. If anything happens to this car, I'll never hear the end of it from Dr. Thurman.
I'm not worried about the car, Miss Palmer. I'm worried about Paul Thurman.
Dr. Thurman, why? Look, you never told me what...
There's a turn up ahead. Hang on.
I was saying, you never told me what your partner Ross told you.
Well, you'll know in a few minutes. I only hope Ross got to the police with the information he gave me over the phone. We're going to need a patrol car to back us up.
We've got one following us. And at this speed, we'll probably pick up three more.
Good. All right, there's the driveway to the sanitarium. Right up ahead.
It's blocked by two police cars.
Hang on, I'm going to stop.
What's going on up there?
Look farther up beyond the service road.
Fire engine? Oh, look at the smoke. Oh, my God. Briar is on fire.
Come on.
That building is a death trap. I've got to help the patient.
Wait. Your patients are all right. They've all been evacuated. Look, over there in the clearing, the matron's got them out.
Oh, thank God. I don't see Paul. Dr. Thurman.
He's probably still in there. That's why Ross called.
Oh, I'm so confused. I don't...
Ross was calling from the prison. Mrs. Mason wasn't there. She'd been showing signs of violent behavior and was transferred to a hospital for psychiatric testing. Now, that was a few days ago, just before you started hearing that strange voice coming from Miss Agatha's room.
You don't think
it's
that...
the only answer to all this. Madness. Security at the hospital is not like security at the prison. Ross checked. They've been looking for her since Friday. I think she's here.
Here? But how would she find out?
But somehow she did. Just look at the pattern, Miss Palmer. Patients warned, evacuated in time, everyone out, safe, but Paul Thurman. Now, remember, Mrs. Mason considered herself a humanitarian. I believe she set that blaze to destroy Briarwood and the man who kept her daughter prisoner there.
Hey. God,
he's right, Margaret.
Paul!
I saw her. I saw the face in the locket. She burst into my office, smashed everything she could get her hands on. Within moments, everything was ablaze.
Oh, Paul, are you all right?
Yeah. I managed to get out somehow after I released Miss Agatha from her locked room. That poor crazed woman is still in there. Last time I saw her, she was clawing her way up the blazing staircase, calling out, "Where are you, little sister? Don't be afraid. Mother is here."
The place is an inferno. We've got to get her out of there.
It's too late. The walls are starting to go. Oh, she's still in there. She's a goner.
Nothing could escape such devastation.
At least the others are safe.
Are you sure they all got out?
Yeah. Everyone but Mrs. Mason.
I don't understand. What made her do it? You know about these things, Paul. What brought that woman here? What drove her to such total destruction?
She couldn't help herself, Margaret. Intellectually, she may not have known whether Miss Agatha was her daughter or her sister. But emotionally, instinctively, she knew. She was driven by one of the strongest forces in nature. Love, Margaret. Mother's love.
According to the police report, only one charred body was found in the ruins of what was once Briarwood Sanatorium. It was found half buried at the foot of the stairs. Police reports do not give details, but they say, clutched in one blackened skeleton hand, someone found a key to a padlock. I'll return shortly.
To the man who bought the Skyhawk, to the girl in the century, we're glad you like your Buicks, glad you set your spirit free.
And to the family from Ohio, to the folks up in St. Paul, nice to see you join us, nice to see you all.
Say, that Buick Century of yours is some car.
Thanks, we like it.
Yeah, and that tie you have on is really nice.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I see you have the V6 engine. Look at all that room.
Uh-huh, isn't that something?
Uh-huh. Tell you something else, it's something. Over 400,000 people have already bought 1976 Buicks.
I bet they're really nice people. Do you think they'd like to come over for dinner?
All 400,000 of them?
Well, I suppose we'd have to borrow some folding chairs.
Yeah, wait a minute. Your mother has a couple.
Yes.
Yeah,
I will make
them. It's nice to see you join us. We're glad it came to be. Nice to see you join us. Glad your spirit's free.
Buick. Dedicated to the free spirit in just about everyone.
When you say Budweiser, when you say Budweiser, you said a lot of things nobody else can say. When you say Budweiser, you say you care enough to only want the king of beers. When you say
Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Hi, this is Tony Marvin for the National Leukemia Association. Please remember this name, Project Research. Join me and get on a winning team, because it's only through research that a breakthrough can be made. Throw your knockout punch against leukemia. Send your tax-deductible donation today to Project Research, care of the National Leukemia Association, Box 3039, Garden City, New York. Our thanks to you for Project Research.
What is sanity? I'm sure many of us often wonder who is sane and who is not. There are many definitions of a patient in need of psychiatric care. The one I liked the best was suggested rather sardonically, I thought, by the noted psychiatrist Dr. Carl Menninger. A patient, says Dr. Menninger, is merely a word which confines and controls the experience of madness before the individual has had a chance to tell his story. Our cast included Paul Hecht, Marion Seldes, Joan Lovejoy, and Ian Martin. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Thank you.
sound, beautiful music. This is KIXI Seattle.
CBS News. The condition of Congressman Wayne Hayes is reported improving in a Barnesville, Ohio hospital, where he has been in a coma since taking an apparent overdose of sleeping pills. I'm Rita Sands reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Congressman Hayes was given the medication for a stomach disorder, and hospital officials say they have no way of knowing if he took too much or if his weakened condition caused an overreaction to the pills. They do say that no suicide note was found, indicating it appears he did not abuse the prescription intentionally. He is reported to be coming out of his coma. Congressman Hayes is currently under investigation because of a sex scandal involving his congressional payroll and a former secretary. Representative John Young of Texas denies he employed a former secretary for sex. A report in the New York Times quotes Colleen Gardner as saying she quit Young's staff in March out of disgust because he had pressured her into a sexual relationship. CBS News continues after this.
The French call it an apéritif. In America, it's the appetizer you drink. Either way, Dubonnet goes before.
Before, that's the time to say I'll have a glass of Dubonnet. Before a meal by day or night, Dubonnet is always right. Before, yeah, before. It's the time before for Dubonnet.
Dubonnet. It all started in France, of course. And whether you call it an apéritif or an appetizer, the proper time to enjoy its distinctive taste is before. Before lunch, before dinner at cocktail time, before whatever you've got cooking. It's a wine that's right for your appetite. Dubonnet Before. Made to make what comes after that much better.
Before, yeah, before. It's the time before for Dubonnet.
A product of USA, Dubonnet Company, New York, New York.
Two battalions of Algerian and Libyan forces have entered Lebanon to help police a ceasefire in the civil war. They are part of a larger force that would police a ceasefire in Lebanon. Arab diplomats are fearful that the peacekeeping plan might run into serious problems because of a reported refusal by Syria to pledge withdrawal of its thousands of troops now on Lebanese soil. There are also signs of a new conflict between Syria and Iraq. Iraqi troops reported moving towards the Syrian border. Meanwhile, the civilians in the Lebanese conflict are anxious and distrustful. John Sheehan has more from Beirut.
The people here in Beirut, the civilians, are less ready to trust a ceasefire than they have been in the past. The people aren't going out into the streets. The businesses didn't open. The street markets didn't spring back up the way they have in the past. Everybody's just sitting and waiting and sticking close to home.
A Thursday night Puerto Rican festival in New York City ended in panic when sounds similar to gunshots sent several thousands of people running for cover. Many people were trampled. Lieutenant Richard Durand at a police station near the festival site has more information.
There was a report of shots fired. The people stampeded. A lot of people were injured. It was mass confusion here for a while. I checked with all the hospitals. So far, we don't have anybody being treated for any gunshot wounds. There's about 40 people over at Metropolitan Hospital that are being treated, but there were injuries resulting from the stampede. There's two women and a three-year-old child that are in intensive care. One woman and the child are in very bad shape, and the other woman has multiple lacerations.
The Boston Globe reports that Jimmy Carter's campaign workers have commissioned a nationwide attitude poll on 14 vice presidential possibilities. The list includes 8 senators, 2 members of the House, 3 governors, and 1 mayor. The list contains the names of 2 former presidential candidates, Senator Frank Church of Idaho and Birch Bayh of Indiana. Senator Edward Kennedy's name will also appear, but he has said repeatedly he would not accept the vice presidential nomination. President Ford and Ronald Reagan are scheduled to meet with Missouri state delegates Friday in their quest for 19 more delegates to the national convention. So far, Mr. Ford has the lead in that state with 15. Reagan has 12, 3 delegates uncommitted. Now this.
Hi, Mike Roy here, along with Dennis Bracken.
And we're here to say that Mike's got a really unusual seafood recipe for you tomorrow, friends, here on CBS. Tell us, oh, King of the Sea.
We'll tell a tale of tuna burgers. Tasty round patties of tuna, all sorts of goodies. They're so good, they'll tug at your taste buds.
Yo-ho-ho and a bottle of rum goes along with it, right?
Huh? Mm-hmm. Not only that, if you're economy-minded, and who isn't, you'll find the tuna burgers fit right in.
Well, look up Mike's Tuna Burger Palace tomorrow on The Cook Thing, here on CBS.
I'm Charles Osgood, CBS News. Join me on Newsbreak, mornings, on most of these CBS radio network stations, as we explore this curious world of ours. Some days, I'll pick a major news story to explore in further detail. Other days, it may be a person who did not exactly make the headlines, but whose story is noteworthy in the course of human events. Newsbreak, one of the many broadcasts of news and commentary, along with hourly CBS News, updates to the minute, on most of these CBS radio network stations.
The Interior Department has announced that a six-man panel of engineers will investigate the Teton Dam disaster. This follows disclosure of a two-year-old federal report that noted two unusually large cracks were found extending into the canyon walls next to the dam during its construction. It was in that area that major leaks were first detected before the dam collapsed last Saturday, the first time it was filled. Rita Sands, CBS News.
CBS for Seattle, this is KIXI. The time, 11:06.
I'm Ben Franklin, and once again I quote from the wisdom of Poor Richard's Almanac on eyes. The most revealing feature of a person is the eyes. Each person's different, each pair reveal the innermost soul, for they have a common language. Some eyes are big, indeed bigger than the stomach. Hungry eyes see far. But a jealous eye sees farther. Remember, when you speak to a man, look at his eyes. But when he speaks to you, look at his mouth. And now, some wisdom from a modern source.
Imagine a store where you can find just about every kind of insurance. A choice of leading insurance companies, low prices, and trained professionals. Imagine all this, and you've got the idea behind the insurance store. For your nearest insurance store, just see an agent listed under the Continental Insurance Soldier in the Yellow Pages.
From KIXI, it's bright and beautiful music, 24 hours a day.